brilliant than you. He's 100 times the super you are. He's evolved beyond anything we've ever seen. Why don't you tell me about him? Mac invited. I brought food and blankets in case we needed to spend the night. We'll eat and you can tell me about your time together. In my head, she said, if he's here and he's as sensitive as you told me he was, his feelings are hurt. Hearing you tell us stories about him may coax him down. I conceded the wisdom of her plan. Mac made a fire, and I discovered I wasn't the only one who'd brought fish, but hers were on ice in her backpack. She wrapped them in foil and tucked them into the embers to roast. As the aroma filled the air, I dropped down cross-legged by the fire and told Mac how we'd met on Olean, how he'd taught me to freeze frame better, and the story about the edible planet. I even told her some of the tales I'd not told anyone about the less dangerous jams we'd gotten ourselves into, and how Shazam had rescued me time and time again. As I reminisced, some of the grief over Dancer that was eating me alive was met by yet more grief, as the realization settled in that Shazam really might not have waited or survived. Did I have to lose everything? Both of them? Was this the harsh life lesson I had to learn now? Did some people just not get an easy life? I would never say it wasn't a good one, but bloody hell. Sometimes I wondered why mine was so rocky all the time. Eventually, my stories made me miss him so keenly that, combined with my fresh, hot grief over Dancer, I did something I'd never done in front of Shazam, because he was so vulnerable and prone to manic fits of depression. No matter how bad our circumstances had gotten, I'd never cried. I did now. Bloody hell, all I did anymore was cry. It was ridiculous. I despised being this person. Mac started to cry too, and I looked at her through my tears and said impatiently, "You don't have anything to cry about. What's wrong with you?" "Your pain is mine. When you hurt, I hurt. If someone who truly loves you sees you in pain, they share it." She tipped her head back, staring up at the air. "And they'd certainly step in to stop it, to comfort you. No matter how much of a pissy mood they were in, they would see that their Yi-Yi was devastated and do anything to make her feel better, even if they didn't feel like it." She practically snarled. The fire exploded in a tower of sparks and was instantly extinguished. The foil-wrapped fish vanished. Bones tumbled out of the sky, showering down on me, bouncing off my head. I scrambled to my feet, rubbing at my eyes. "Shazam, are you there?" Violet eyes materialized in the sky above me, narrowed to slits.
"You said wait. You're expects. Bars on my cage. Did you come? No. Not then. Not the next day. Not ever."
Holy hell! He was here! He was alive! He vanished. Another bone exploded out of the sky and bounced off my head. Ow! I clapped a hand to it. "Ever is now! I'm sorry. I'll tell you I'm sorry every day for the rest of my life if it makes you feel better."
"It will take much more than that,"
came the bodiless sniff.
"My knots have sprouted an entire civilization of knots that have been reproducing with the ferocity and fertility of a band of mating Kaliras. I'm one big tangle,"
came his anguished wail.
"And I'm fat."
"I'll brush you. You're not fat. Just come out. Let me see you."
"Am too,"
he wailed.
"You may only see parts of me, the slender ones."
Eyes materialized 10 feet above me.
"You will leave me again,"
he said tearfully. "I won't. I'll never leave you again." I said something I'd never said before, a thing I'd learned to say with Dancer. "I love you, Shazam. I can't stand living without you. I missed you so much that I went a little crazy for a time, but I couldn't come back. Because the silver took me back to Dublin."
"You found your way home, Yi-Yi?"
he said tremulously.
"You did it. You finally made it?
My heart melted. The happiness in his voice was unmistakable. Happy for me, because I'd finally gotten what I'd been seeking for so long. Yes, and because of that damned infinity of mirrors.
Not infinite. Tiny red. 400,762.
He corrected. I was trying to find a way to mark the correct one from the other side so I could bring you home with me. I'm so sorry, Shazam. Suddenly, he manifested fully, dropping from the sky to plop fatly on the trash can. I blinked. Good grief! He really was fat. His furry white belly draped both sides of the trash can. I made a jaded face to mask my astonishment. No way I was hurting his feelings now. He might vanish again. Behind me, Mac gasped.
See? She thinks I'm fat!
He shot an accusing glare at Mac. That's not why I gasped, Mac said, sounding oddly strained. He thumped the trash can with a paw and turned an accusing glare on me.
You sent it through empty. What kind of yee-yee does that? Not a speck of food. Not an ort. Not even a morsel.
He tossed his shaggy head and scowled. Then a belch escaped him, and a brilliant orange feather floated up into the air. He hastily licked his paw and began scrubbing at his whiskers with an innocent expression. My eyes narrowed. Did you eat the tribesman? He swung his great head from side to side in elaborate denial.
Not me.
He belched again, and half a blue feather drifted out. How many of the tribesmen did you eat? I demanded.
You told me not to eat people. I didn't. Well, maybe I did, but only a few. The rest,
he said, slumping a mound of fatness and foul mood over the rusted can.
Decided I was too fat to share an island with.
He shot me a meek, pitiful look.
They went away.
He turned his nose up in a snit.
I have no idea where.
Shazam, I said warningly.
They took my yee-yee away from me,
he snarled. How many did you eat?
They were going to eat me. You would probably prefer I'd let them.
He glared at me, eyes narrowed, nose crinkling.
Then you wouldn't be bothered with me,
he added in a small voice. I'm never bothered by you. I adore you. Answer my question. He stood up, back arching into a horseshoe shape with porcupine bristles ridging his spine.
What did you expect?
He said defensively.
I ate them, okay? I have problems. You know that about me.
He sniffed, and tears began to flow.
Now you don't want me anymore. I should just die. We're all going to die anyway. What does it matter if I do it now? Who would care?
He flung himself dramatically off the trash can, rolled mid-air to land flat on his back on the ground, where he lay like a dead thing, head lolling to the side, paws up in the air. After a moment, he squinted an eye open to make sure I was looking, then closed it hastily and resumed being dead. You ate all of them? I said incredulously. The entire civilization? We talked about this. You said you wouldn't do it again.
I was hungry. And bored. There was nothing to do. You said you would be back. You weren't. Your expects. Not bars on my cage anymore.
Danny, Mac said warningly behind me. You do know what Shazam is. Right? I shot an inquiring look over my shoulder. You mean, like, what species? Shazam leapt to his feet, instantly alert, and drew up to his full height.
I have no species. I am a singularity.
That's exactly what I mean, Mac said. I shook my head. He wouldn't tell me.
Because I belong to no species,
Shazam said tightly.
Don't listen to her, Yee-Yee. She lies.
He wouldn't tell you for a good reason. He's a Hellcat, Mac said.
am not!
Shazam reared up on his haunches, eyes narrowed to thin slits, and spat and hissed alternately. Max said, They're nearly extinct. Or more precisely, there's said to be only one left in all the universes. They're as mythical as the unicorn. What's a Hellcat? And how do you know what he is? I said. No one knows exactly what they are, or what their true form is. They were legend to the Fae. I saw a picture of one of them in my files. The form he's adopted is the one they use to lure others close. Highly evolved, they have uncontrollable appetites, and were destroyed because they kept wiping out civilizations. They were hunted by every world and every galaxy. They learned to hide in higher dimensions, coming down only to prey. Danny, you made friends with the last remaining Hellcat. Hellcats don't make friends. They eat them. I looked at Shazam, who was staring at Mac with a venomous gaze.
You will never find me to hunt me, Tiny White.
He vanished. Great! Now look what you did, I snapped. Legends are always bigger and badder than the real thing. You of all people should know that. To the air, I said, No one is going to hunt you, Shazam. I'll protect you. His eyes materialized in front of me.
You will? Promise? Always?
Yes. But you can't eat people on our world. And you can't wipe out species. We'll find another way to deal with your appetite.
But what if I can't help myself?
He wailed. You can. I'll teach you. You did great when we were together before. Everything's easier when you're not alone. Come on. We're going home, I told him firmly.
Home? Where I can stay forever?
His lips pulled back, revealing sharp fangs and a black-tipped tongue as he turned a suspicious glare on Mac.
She doesn't want me.
Not true, Mac said, but there will be rules. She glanced at Barons, who raised a brow and shrugged in a silent,
What's one Hellcat compared to the things we've handled? I am not a Hellcat!
Shazam said with a regal sniff.
I am Shazam. My Yee-Yee named me, and that is my only name.
Shazam, Mac said, and it was the offer of a truce, of new beginnings. To me, she said, Can you control him? I nodded and opened my arms. Shazam exploded out of the air and leapt into them at full velocity, taking me back to the ground beneath him, licking my face and biting my hair. I wrapped my arms around him and held onto his furry, powerful body. He was going to sleep with me tonight and wake me up in the morning. I had someone of my own to love. I would survive the pain of losing Dancer, and one day, life would be good again.
And we'll have adventures,
he said happily, pouncing my curls. Every day, I told him. Ooh, tribesmen breath.
Your pitiful abandonment, my bad breath. You might have packed that can with fish, but no. Another big empty, like all the other big empties in my life.
No big empties anymore.
Promise?
Swear it. He shifted his paws about, accommodating his great belly, then dropped hard on my stomach, evoking a loud woof from me, and touched his damp nose to mine.
I see you, Yee-Yee,
he said, eyes slanted half-closed and gleaming. I thought of Dancer, of love lost, of love regained. I see you too, Shazam. Then he was up and running across the island, and I was off chasing him and laughing. He pounced my ankles and tripped me, and I tumbled to the ground with him on top of me, nipping at my jeans, tugging at my shirt. Beneath a dazzling sun, on the island where I'd lost him along with a part of myself, I found both again. We played for hours, running and blowing off steam, wading at the lake's edge, catching silvery minnows. And I was happy to see he'd not eaten all the fish. He'd only eaten his enemy. I understood that. He could control himself. Together we'd learn smarter ways of living and being. Much later, we sat together, watching the waves lap at the shore. Shazam snuggled close to my side, keeping me warm as the temperature dropped. I'd forgotten all about the others, lost in a time of much-needed joy and abandon. As stars came out to twinkle in the sky above me, Shazam looked at me, and I was suddenly struck by how old his eyes seemed. All playfulness and vulnerability had vanished, and I was struck suddenly by how accurately I'd named him after a wise old wizard.
He's happy, Yee-Yee.
I went very still. He who?
The one who danced you into love.
I stared at him, then... How do you know about him?
Slipstream. I'm in it. All. I am somewhat larger than I appear.
His whiskers twitched, as if he were vibrating with hidden laughter. Then he busied himself, polishing them with spit-moistened paws that had long lethal talons. My Hellcat. Shazam, what are you, really? He leapt up and was off, racing across the island. Over his shoulder he called,
Hungry and ready to go. Hurry, Tiny Red. Take me home.
Home. I knew some truths about that word now. You weren't always born into one, but if you were lucky, you found one somewhere along the way. It was a place where you fit and were accepted, where people helped you with your problems, and you helped them with theirs, where you made mistakes, and so did they, but the love never wavered. A place where erosions never turned into landslides, because you dug one another out, and always would. Shazam and I stepped into the portal together this time.
63. The Unseelie King walked to the edge of the Horsehead Nebula, great dark wings trailing behind him, staring but not seeing. What was it she'd once said to him?
You have so many ambitions. I have but one. To love.
And he'd thought, small, human, beautiful, but small. He'd liked that in his woman, a small, lovely ambition. Given that she didn't have his talents, he could see that was enough for her. He, however, had from the very first moments of his existence teemed with power, bristled electric, exploded with it. He was a supernova. Creating was his drug. Addictive and irresistible, all-consuming. He'd believed mere emotion could never compete with the power rush of slapping together worlds and watching them evolve. That love could yield no prize that might make it worth turning his back on shaping civilizations and birthing stars, building his court of shadows. He'd been wrong. When he'd found her on that tiny provincial planet in that tiny three-dimensional universe, she wasn't the one who needed saving from her flatland existence. Life was so simple. It always had been. Be the conductor, forever removed from the orchestra pit. Or be part of the song. The Unseelie King turned his face in a general upward direction, where if there were something like him standing in the wings, waiting for the chance to go a long distance out of the way to return a short distance correctly, it might overhear and take up the reins, as he did what he should have done a small eternity ago. It felt good. Human. Small. Beautiful. He said, I quit.
64. I have loved you for 1,000 years. I'll love you for 1,000 more. Mac. I was stretched out on the Chesterfield, in front of a hissing gas fire, listening to the rain patter against the windows of the store, indulging myself in a time of reflection before I got up to tackle what would surely be another eventful, fascinating day. Tomorrow was Halloween. And Barron's birthday, and the She-Seers were having a huge party out at the Abbey. Danny had moved back into the fortress with Shazam, and was quickly becoming a living legend, bristling electric with energy and intellect, traveling the slipstream with her enigmatic, flamboyant Hellcat. Cat and Enyo were gathering yet more She-Seers, and there was talk of re-establishing a global order. The black holes had vanished from our world, and a song had awakened life and even the shade-devastated dark zones. Although it was late fall, we were having a rainy spring, and I suspected our seasons might be completely out of balance for a few years. Deep in the earth, connected to the core by the true magic, I felt a new subtle magic in the planet. Our world was alive in ways it hadn't been for hundreds of thousands of years. Dublin was bustling again. Each day we reclaimed another part of the city. Life was slowly returning to as close to normal as it would ever be again. The unique fey hues still stained our world, and until I figured out how to either sing the walls back up between the realms, or unearth the power of our court and move it to a new planet, they would continue to do so. What to do with my race of immortals was the next stage of my journey. It was bound to be an interesting one. My parents had settled in Dublin, with no intention of ever returning to Georgia. We'd lost and gained things. We'd grieved and celebrated. The future was a mystery to us all, one we would explore together. My greatest concerns were for Danny. Getting Shazam back had alleviated some of the anguish I had been so worried might turn her back into Jada. But she wasn't fully Danny anymore either, the way she had been when Dancer was alive. There was a coolness to her diction, a distance in her gaze that I suspected might be there for some time. Still, all in all, life was good and rich, and there was no other place I'd rather be. I rolled over onto my back and stretched out, staring absently up at the ceiling, 5 stories above my head, slowly becoming aware of the distant mural. I narrowed my eyes, wondering for the 100th time what it was. Then, with a snort, I invited the elements around me to erect a tall, shining scaffold, kicked up off the sofa, and climbed the handy ladder on the side. There were quite a few things about being the fake queen I didn't at all mind. Still, sifting and hanging midair was something I wasn't yet comfortable with, hence the scaffolding. As I climbed the rungs higher and higher, the scene etched into the plaster, layered with paint and gold flakes and crystals, became clear, and I gasped. I stretched out on the platform and stared up at it for a long time, absorbing it, letting the truth seep into me in a way I could never have allowed when I first arrived in Dublin. I marveled at the beauty, trying to understand how it eluded me for so long when it was so clearly detailed in extraordinary fey-kissed colors. I'd finally found the cause for the spatial distortion in my bookstore. The shimmering mirror in the scene, painted above my head, was an open silver, one of the most powerful ever created, and I was pretty sure I knew where it went. Then the air around me changed, and my body fired on all pistons, like it always does whenever Jericho Barons is near. He topped the scaffolding and stretched out on his back beside me. I looked over and met his dark gaze. I knew him intimately now, who he had once been, who he was, and who he was becoming. I loved each incarnation and never wanted to be without him.
What are you doing up here, Rainbow Girl?
Looking.
Are you seeing?
I am. We all played our parts in the pageant of life, and as with any stage production, while the method of acting can be as varied as the individual, there were a limited number of roles. All were offered. You tried out. You chose. Live or die. Understudy or star. You knew this was here. You were waiting for me, I said. Since before I ever walked into your store.
Yes.
Who painted it? He shrugged a shoulder.
No idea. It was here when I bought the place, but the building has morphed over time.
I saw things so clearly now, how he'd taught me, helped me evolve, gave and withheld information, even misled at times so I could find my own path, sought to level the playing field so we would be equals, and tried to avoid the Unseelie King's mistakes. I remembered the night he'd nearly repeated a significant one, when he thought I was dying in Malusha's lair deep beneath the Burren. He'd growled that it wasn't what he would have chosen, as he'd poised on the brink of changing me into a creature like him to keep me alive with him forever. You could have told me, saved me from worrying that I was you.
Some things can't be told, only learned, or not.
Then it was destined. The idea chafed.
Never destined, and still not written in stone. Merely possible, as are many other outcomes.
I glanced back up at the man and woman in the mural on the ceiling of Baron's Books and Baubles. His wings, her crown, Baron's face, mine. I studied them. The happiness in their eyes, the promise of a tomorrow I embraced. Maybe we'll do better. He laughed.
Ah, the unquenchable human hope.
Then,
Mac,
he said, and held out his hand. It was so much more than a hand he was offering. It was nights of love so consuming it burned, days of grief that chilled, a kingdom of black ice and a mansion of alabaster. It was all possible mistakes and every imaginable success. We would do better. What was painted above me was no more than an invitation for a future. We could accept it or turn away. The Fae were starfish, regenerating. As old ones passed, new ones arose. One thing I did know was whatever path we chose to go down, we'd do it together. I took his hand. Jericho. Fire to his eyes. Frost to my flame. Forever.
65. It ain't over till it's over. Great dark wings trailed behind him as Cruz moved deeper into the laboratory. He'd felt the precise moment the king had abdicated. Like the Seelie Queen's magic, the fey power of the Seelie Unseelie King had to pass to another. It hadn't come to him. Yet. Nor, however, had it gone somewhere else. It hovered in the distance, apparently undecided. He intended to help it decide. Cruz stood at the king's mixing table, blending a dash of this with a bit of that, according to the spells he'd taken from the Shisudu, and in short order created his first child. Rules. Malleable, said the one who'd spoken for the king, yet claimed not to be him. They certainly were. The Court of Shadows was already being reborn.
We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of Fever Song by Karen Marie Monning, performed by Amanda Lee Cobb and Jim Frangione, directed by Lewis Milgram. Performance copyright 2016 by Brilliance Audio. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.